You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education Issue Review podcast for the edition covering the 14th to the 20th of April 2016. My name is John Elms. I'm joined today by books editor Karen Shook and reporters Matthew Rice and Jack Grove. Last week saw Times Higher Education's third Young Universities Summit held in the Catalan capital, Barcelona. Jack was the intrepid reporter tasked with covering it, and he'll be taking us through the various things he heard and saw in just a moment. Undergraduates are reportedly reading fewer and fewer books, and when they do so, reading only segments rather than the whole text. In his cover feature, Matthew has wondered why, and in a bid to ignite a lasting bibliophilia, asked a number of scholars for their essential reading recommendations to incoming students. And sticking with books, Karen is on hand to take us through the selection of academic tomes we've had reviewed this week. But firstly, Jack, you've been in sunny Spain at our Young University Summits. What have you been finding out?
Actually, it was quite rainy for quite a bit of it.
Oh, sorry. Rolls off the tongue better to say sunny Spain.
Actually, we had some good weather. And we're delighted to have it. Yes, so this was our Young Universities Summit, where we launched our rankings of the top universities in the world under the age of 50 years old. We had delegates from about 30 countries there, and had lots of interesting discussions about how sort of more sort of nimble and agile younger universities could sort of outmaneuver older universities that have sort of more sort of legacy that they have to sort of adhere to. I think it was quite interesting that we were hosted by a university in Barcelona called Pompeu Fabra University. That was set up only in 1990, around the time of the Barcelona Olympics. And it's now, according to our rankings, Spain's second top university. And they actually think they are the top. Spain has some quite historic and revered universities. The University of Salamanca was apparently the world's top university in the 16th century, but no longer. So this sort of 20 something university is now sort of flying well, comparatively high. It's not in our top 100 overall, but just sort of interesting that a university can sort of sidestep some of the restrictive red tape of that Spanish academics feel is holding them back and do something differently. And we heard also from Liz Barnes, who's probably the newest VC in the UK. She only started at the start of April. How she was saying that she wanted to see more sort of trendier, more innovative classrooms where students could sort of use their tablet devices and, you know, lecture theatres where the seat, they could turn around in their seats and speak to fellow students rather than just all looking forward. Lots of interesting speakers.
Sure, and then one of the keynotes, David Sweeney from Hefke, he said something quite interesting about young universities, modern institutions. Yeah. They have a global impact and they have a really good potential, and that touches on the feature you wrote a few weeks back about young universities, what's the disparity between age and youth.
This is basically, I think there is a perception somewhat that in a university town, the older university will do like the heavy research and the science, and then the younger university will sort of do a lot of outreach work, and they'll sort of educate the less highly achieving students, and they won't do so much sort of hard-hitting research. And David Sweeney said, if you look at the case studies from the REF, it was quite noticeable that the young universities, their research was having an impact not just in their local area but nationally and internationally. So this idea of the sort of one university does this and another university does that is rather outdated.
Yeah, so it's kind of getting over that kind of almost tunnel vision attitude by some of the more established universities, or he calls them, there are still voices in higher education that argue that modern universities have mainly a provincial role. I mean, that's very disparaging, I would think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's true that newer universities do maybe look a little bit more to their local area, and some of their students may be more local, and they take great pride in that, but he's saying that they also look outwards in terms of their research. So it's got a global impact.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jack's spread on the Young University Summit can be found on pages 8 and 9, and there are four little pieces there to take in. Also, the one thing that you mentioned about Liz Barnes's comments about dull layout of university classrooms, that touches on something that I actually saw from an interview with Trevor Humphreys, the new chair of Ward, who wonders in this conversation he had with me. He noted that investment in estates is still vital, and institutions that don't appreciate how integral the estate is to attracting and retaining students and staff do so at their own peril. So clearly the physical estate has a huge bearing on all manners of HE. Matthew, a ritual feature with intense interest. It was a very enjoyable feature, and it must have been a joy to investigate. Tell us what it's all about.
Well, this is about the concern which is expressed by a lot of academics, and some of them, you know, reasonably young themselves, about the fact that their students really don't read very much. They don't sort of have reading as a habit, or at least they read, you know, comparatively short pieces. But the idea of getting them to read a full-length book is greeted with horror in some cases. And so one of the things we were asking, you know, is this a problem? And a lot of them said, well, it is. I mean, they wanted their students to engage with more extended and complex arguments. They thought often it was very good to read around in scientific subjects, to read around the history of the subject, to realise how even the things which are totally taken for granted now were once, you know, matters of great dispute. Often not many disciplines have ethical issues which it's good for people to reflect on, and so on. And so there's quite a lot of concern out there that, you know, a significant proportion of students just don't won't read. I mean, a friend of mine asked, it was an MA course, asked her students to read the Communist Manifesto, which is after all not only very historically important, but very short, written for the working man, very impassioned, you know, quite a good read by most people's standards. And they were sort of appalled that they might have to read all of it. So this is quite a worrying thing.
A spectre is haunting Europe.
Yes, indeed.
The digested read.
Yeah, exactly, yes. So to do our little bit to try and combat this malaise, we joined forces with TES, Times Educational Supplement, which is aimed at school teachers, by asking a group of academics across disciplines to suggest one book that they thought would be good for sixth formers going on to universities to read. And we were very vague about what we wanted, and so we were delighted by the variety. And it goes all the way from Ludwig Wittgenstein, pretty heavyweight philosophy, to The Wind in the Willows and P.G. Woodhouse. Also books encouraging people to, you know, adopt political lines, I guess, or certainly think politically, take more radical views. Books warning about the nastiness of intellectual life or the continuing sexism in the university. And other books just trying to encourage students to get out there and have fun, travel, have lots of sex, have lots of fun. And make, you know, think of their university years as a great opportunity for self-development and enjoyment. It was good. It's a great selection of books, and fun to argue with or complain about what isn't in there, but also great fun to look at what these academics think their students should be reading.
Yeah, no, because when I read it, obviously when you read this feature, I dare you not to try and think of a book that you think would be appropriate for this list. I couldn't think of a book that would be appropriate for this list because I wanted to think of something maybe experiential that would make me understand what life was about, but then that sounds a bit worthy, and then I kept on thinking, well, that's not going to be a good one. I remember my English teacher saying that I should read Madame Bovary before, quote, I get run over by a bus. So I don't know, maybe Madame Bovary is the right one to read. I don't know. What do you think?
That wouldn't be my suggestion, but there are some sort of, coming-of-age novels or novels about the sort of in-group, in-crowd and out-crowd in universities. There are quite a lot which are sort of encouraging people to grow up in interesting ways and use their university experience not just to learn facts but to learn about life.
Sure. Well, Matthew's feature, really, really interesting, fantastically fun feature, and quite important, obviously, is found on page 34, and you can see what some of the academics that we have contributing have suggested for reading. It's a nice segue into the book section, Karen. I mean, as our esteemed literary editor, our books editor, maybe you can offer some insight as to what books should be read before you...
I think if you're at all iffy about whether you're going to university, the important thing to do is to not read a single campus novel because it will make you not want anything to do with academics. This week in the books pages, our shelf life guest is the unbelievably eminent Deirdre McCloskey, the professor of economics and history at the University of Illinois at Chicago. As we always do in Shelf Life, we ask our guest about reading books, and Deirdre recommends Winnie the Pooh, Wind in the Willows, The Jungle Book. This is from her childhood, all the way up to Isaiah Berlin, one of her heroes, and by way of saying that she doesn't actually give books as gifts because she wants them all for herself. Her view is that she who dies with the most books wins. Also this week, Paul Burnell reviews The Closing of the Net by Monica Horton, who is served as an independent expert on the Council of Europe's Committee of Experts on Cross-Border Flow of Internet Traffic. It essentially exposes the role of corporate lobbying in manipulating politics in this area. Should be a surprise to no one. Speaking of eminent scholars, Charles Taylor is in our pages this week. His new book, The Language Animal, is reviewed by Jane O'Grady. Fascinating work of anthropology, Lynn Carr's book, A Year in White, Cultural Newcomers to Lukumi and Santeria in the United States, Santeria being the religion brought from Africa and quite prevalent in Cuba and also in the Hispanic U.S., she herself underwent the year-long initiation into the priesthood in Santeria and writes about that. Getting back to the digital world, John Gilby reviews David Levy's book Mindful Tech, How to Bring Balance to Our Digital Lives, drawing in the role of the seductive digital environment in keeping people away from books. John says, he has an inbuilt suspicion of anything with the word mindful in the title. I'm sure a lot of our readers will agree. But the book has some excellent suggestions for getting away from that device. The author himself relaxes doing calligraphy, so perhaps something that doesn't involve a keyboard. And our book of the week is a fantastic book of the week by the physicist Jana Levin from Barnard College at Columbia, Black Hole Blues and Other Songs from Outer Space. And this is all about the Laser Interferometric Gravitational Wave Observatory. Inability by people like me to pronounce that tricky second word is probably why it's known as LIGO. There is a brief addendum at the end of the book covering the discovery announced on the 14th of September last year about gravitational waves, but the main focus of the book, and Levin is a fantastic writer, is on the key personalities behind this, the men described as the Troika. And Marcus Chown is our reviewer, and he points out that these three guys may well be under the consideration of the Nobel Committee, and he says they should hurry up.
Absolutely. A really, really broad selection of books this week. I mean, they're always broad, but particularly this week, I noticed.
But no campus novels.
No. I agree with you on that one. A campus novel probably won't necessarily stand you in good stead for university. maybe. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for in this week's issue review. But as always, complete coverage of the latest HE news and features, and of course our book section, can be found in the magazine and on our website. We are thankful that we have a very vocal readership, so if you'd like to add your voice to this group and make a comment on any of the content of this week's edition, you can do so on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website, timeshighereducation.com. Alternatively, if you wish to drop us a longer comment, you can send us an email to the.letters@tesglobal.com. Please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week's issue review, I wish you a very good goodbye.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.